just on Monday. Are you planning any more?
Yeah, that was our first one. It was really successful. I think they had 32 people show up. It was at the Midland Library, and they wanted to get the message out. There was an elected official that was going to be present. I wasn't there, so but they wanted to kind of like get that out there to that official and to really connect with her, because you know, the information that they get is primarily coming from the executive management team. So we just really want them to consider the community and the staff and our perspective so they can make that decision.
Okay. Well, I think we are just about out of time. Still wasn't able to find that person who wrote in, but I will link to it on my program page. So thank you so much, Wendy Medrano, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me, and everybody, remember, sign that petition. Thank you.
All right, SaveMultnomahCounty.org. This is Paul Rowland for Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO Community Radio. Bye-bye.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Pamplin is, at the end of the day, an Oregon company. It reflects the stories and the values that Oregonians want to pick up and read about in their paper. For a larger group like Sinclair, we are a market.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we're going to take a good look at local journalism. We have two terrific guests. With us today are Chaz Hundley. Chaz is a journalist and rural community advocate from the agricultural and forest land community of Gales Creek. He is the editor of the Gales Creek Journal, the Banks Post, and several other writing and news media projects that are active in rural Northwest Oregon. Also with us is Mark Miller. Mark is the editor-in-chief of the Hillsborough and Forest Grove News-Times, the Sherwood Gazette, the Beaverton Valley Times, and the Regal Courier, all local news outlets owned by the Pamplin Media Group. Gentlemen, could you begin by briefly describing the publications you work for? I'm primarily interested in the geographic areas you cover and your focus. Chaz, could you go first for us, please?
Sure thing. So the Gales Creek Journal and Banks Post, they're two newspapers combined into one. We cover news in the city of Banks, the unincorporated rural communities of Gales Creek, Timber, Buxton, Manning, Roy, Mountaindale, and a half dozen other dots on the map that don't have much of an infrastructure. Basically everything west and north of the Forest Grove city limits all the way to the Tillamook and Columbia County lines.
And how frequently do you publish?
We publish weekly in one of our papers, almost daily on our websites, and we have an infrequent monthly publication as well.
And how do you distribute your publications?
Our weekly is a subscriber-based only, much like most of Pamplin's papers. It's through USPS, and then we also have a paywalled website, two websites, both with paywalls. And then when we put out our other publication, it's mailed to every single household, about 5,000 in the region.
Mark, what about you? What are your paper's focus and what areas do you cover?
So the Beaverton Valley Times, also known as the Times, covers the communities of Beaverton, Alloa, Bethany, Tigard, Tualatin, Sherwood, Bull Mountain, Metzger, West Slope, and Garden Home, and Cedar Mill. And the Sherwood Gazette is a monthly newspaper, and that covers the city of Sherwood and some of the outlying rural areas like Parrot Mountain. The Regal Courier is also a monthly, and that covers the city of King City and the neighborhood of Summerfield and Tigard, which is a 55 and older community. The News Times, which has a Hillsborough edition and a Forest Grove edition, covers Western Washington County. That includes Forest Grove, Cornelius, Hillsborough, Banks, Gales Creek, Gaston, and North Plains.
Interesting. And how do you distribute the newspapers?
So we have a subscription model for the News Times and the Times, and those are mailed weekly. The News Times comes out Wednesdays and the Times comes out Thursdays. Like the Gales Creek Journal and Banks Post, those are mailed directly to our subscribers, first class mail, so it arrives on the day that it comes out. And our monthlies, the Real Courier distributes to all households in King City and Summerfield, and the Sherwood Gazette distributes to all households in Sherwood.
As a subscriber personally to the Beaverton Valley Times, just a little curious, I used to notice a number of boxes in Beaverton where you could simply pull a copy of the Beaverton Valley Times for mm-hmm. free. Are those boxes, I haven't seen them lately, are they still out there? And if so, how does free deal with subscription?
I'm glad you asked that. We've shifted our model somewhat, but the short answer is yes, we still do have newspaper boxes. The issue that we distribute through our free newspaper boxes, which you can find at most major shopping centers in Beaverton, Tigard, and Tualatin, is actually we have a different version that goes out to subscribers from the version that goes out on the racks. They share most of the same content, but we've got a different front page on the version that you'll find in newspaper boxes than the one that you'll get in the mail. And it will have some differing content on the inside as well.
Pamphlin Mark owns a number of individual newspapers. You ran through a number of them for us. Often, in an effort to maximize resources, groups will buy up independent newspapers or absorb them. How much independence can each paper have within a larger organization? How much independence can they retain? I want your answer first, and then I'm going to look at Chaz, who may have a different perspective.
Sure. That is an interesting question. We are a locally owned company. Our owner lives in Lake Oswego, and our corporate headquarters is in Milwaukee, Clackamas area, just outside Portland. We have our main office for Washington County is in Forest Grove. Not every member of my team works there. We generally take an approach where we are all part of one company. We share content as needed. We cooperate on certain company-wide projects. We're in regular communication with other editors and publishers. We're kind of all in the same fight, as it were. Mm-hmm. Our mandate is for each of our papers to serve its community. And sometimes that's going to mean following the same practices as other papers in our company, and sometimes that's going to mean going our own way a little bit. Every editor and publisher has some discretion to cover the sorts of things that they want to cover, to present them in the way that they want to be presented. We have some unifying strategies and approaches. Our front pages, for example, are designed pretty similarly. We have similar banners on mm-hmm. each of the papers. But in terms of the content that goes in them, that is up to each individual editor.
As the host of this show called Inside Washington County, I don't think I'm going to disagree with you at all. However, as much as I appreciate and respect your perspective, Chaz, you're publishing two very small independent papers. And I don't consider that a group, a conglomeration of any kind. What do you think? Can small newspapers get together and still maintain their independence, get together with other newspapers and still maintain their independence under a group?
I think so. Our papers are, of course, more or less one and the same. We publish different content based on if it's in Banks or Gales Creek. People in Banks don't want to hear about a small community gathering in Gales Creek, and Gales Creek residents sure don't care about Banks City Council news. But I think it is possible for small newspapers, even independent newspapers, to collaborate and work with other papers as part of a group, whether that's under the same umbrella of the same company like Mark's company, mm-hmm. or even on a more informal basis. We've worked with papers ranging from Tillamook and Columbia County, the Vernonia's Voice and Tillamook County Pioneer. We've worked with papers in Yamhill County on some content sharing. And usually on just an informal basis, hey, we both ran into these things, we've both done some work, we're not competing at all, have an article. And I think there's a lot of room for that, either both within this county and elsewhere as well.
That cooperation sounds great, but I was wondering if staying independent increases your costs, and if you're not sometimes tempted to seek joining other groups or forming a group or something in order to save costs.
We've looked at stuff like that. I'll be honest, we are still very much a startup news organization. I try to remind myself that when I get discouraged, that I only launched this as a full-time endeavor in 2017. Mm-hmm. So we've been around for 2.5 years. So it's really hard to sit down and say I could save in this arena, because I don't have everything dialed down perfectly. So maybe I could, but I think I need to think a little larger picture than right now, just diving in and thinking about joining another group, or, I don't know, trying to approach my neighbor, Mr. Pamplin, and selling to him or something like that. But I think, yeah, of course, any organization that has multiple branches is going to see cost savings. It's why you see newspaper mergers happening. It's a smart move. But for us, our independence is one of our strengths, in my opinion, and I plan on keeping that.
It could be one of your strengths from a point of view of marketing as well as from the point of view of content. And understood, and good luck with that, sir. Mark, if a local news outlet is going to join Pamplin Media, not referring to our immediate conversation, what can both your press and the managing staff of the local outlet do to maintain journalistic quality and publishing frequency? Are there innovations such as, you know, stressing digital, multimedia mediums, or organizational changes that increase a recently merged outlet's chance of success?
It's an interesting question. There are a few different ways to look at it. The most recent addition that we made to the Pampa Media Group family of papers is actually a small paper in Charbonneau, and that's a monthly newspaper. And by associating that more with the Wilsonville Spokesman, Charbonneau is a neighborhood of Wilsonville, but it's also south of the river. It's separate, physically separate from the rest of Wilsonville, and has very much its own identity and community flavor. At the same time, affiliating with the larger Wilsonville City Paper enables it to have more of an expanded reach, perhaps enhances some of the content that it's able to provide, and it's sort of an opportunity for us, one, to reach a different market, obviously, which is the purpose whenever we look at acquiring a newspaper or news product. The last large-scale acquisition that Pamplin Media Group made was actually several years ago. I believe it was around 2012 when Pamplin Media Group acquired many of the former Eagle newspapers, and that actually included the Wilsonville paper, among others. Woodburn as well was one of those.
Is there a difference between a major national broadcasting group like Sinclair Broadcasting Group and the more localized organization like Pamplin?
Pamplin is, at the end of the day, an Oregon company. It reflects the stories and the values that Oregonians want to pick up and read about in their paper. For a larger group like Sinclair, we are a market. I don't see something like Sinclair looking at Oregonians and going, I love Oregon, this is what makes them special, I want to write about that. They go, I love Oregon, they have a very centralized metro region where we can get as much money as we can out of this area. We're a market to them. And sure, that brings some value to what a big organization can do. You know, they have branches throughout the country, they're a larger version of what locally Pamplin is, and there's advantages to that. But they have no soul. Pamplin does. Pamplin is an Oregon company that cares about Oregonians and not just making a buck and then leaving.
I have seen studies that have shown that civic engagement declines when there's no active local journalism. That's one of the reasons why this is so important to us here at Inside Washington County. Well, one important role for local journalists is raising awareness during local election cycles that will hopefully result in greater voter turnout. The Banks Post and Pamplin Papers have different editorial styles when it comes to stories on candidates and endorsements. Can you each explain your positions, Chaz?
Sure. So we do cover elections quite extensively. We try to, as time allows, interview as many candidates as possible, and there are a lot of them. but we don't do any endorsements of any type. We do a straight news interview. We talk about the positions they take, put some information out about them, and then publish it, and then let the voters decide. We don't take any stances on either candidates or
measures
or ballot measures or anything.
And not that I'm criticizing that, but could you tell me why?
Sure. We are a very tiny news organization. You'll see in larger papers that little disclaimer in the editorial section saying the editorial team is different from the opinion team, and that would require cutting me physically in half. So I don't think anybody can take me that seriously if I say, here's my opinion on something, now here's my news facts about it. I don't want you to pick up a paper and go, am I reading Chaz's opinion or am I reading the truth? And so I would rather, I don't think anybody really cares about my opinion all that much. In the pages of our newspaper, we have a goal, and that's to very specifically cover the facts, and that's it, ma'am. And I don't want to dilute that with my own thoughts on something that aren't all that relevant, usually.
Does that mean that neither of your publications have an editorial page?
The only type of opinion we have is we do accept letters to the editor quite frequently. We just published one a couple days ago, mm-hmm. and we welcome those. Please send them in.
So that's the public's opinion, not necessarily the opinion of the publisher, editor. Got it. Mark, you take a different approach?
Most people who are going to be receiving a ballot in the mail and filling it out and sending it back don't have the opportunity to sit down with these candidates. These are names on a page. If they look in the election pamphlet, mm-hmm. they can see a little picture of them and read their biography. Maybe they have the opportunity to go to a candidate forum or view one on community television. Maybe they are able to read a news story or two. I see sort of our endorsements as an opportunity for us to ask questions of these candidates that they might not be asked in another setting. Get to know them, them to the point where we have a sense of what they would be like in this position that they're seeking. But when we make an endorsement of a candidate, it's because we've had this opportunity to ask this candidate questions, get to know this candidate in a way that most voters aren't going to be able to, just physically aren't going to be able to, and apply our own not just perspective, but our knowledge of the community in making a decision about whether this is the person who should be serving the community in this role.
Well, one of the things I like is looking at the media making endorsements. Generally speaking, they're more independent than the electeds that make endorsements. Often the elected make endorsements for political reasons as opposed to reasons that might suggest that it's a best candidate. You don't have that vested interest. The media doesn't. And hopefully you maintain the interest in the community. What is it you guys learn when folks don't respond in support of your endorsements, when they respond differently?
That's a good question. As I said, we have an opportunity to see these candidates close up mm-hmm. and talk to them face to face and ask them, a set of questions. Number one, I think voters often don't have that ability, that experience. Number two, it is unavoidable that we bring our own biases to this process. Having sort of an editorial board format allows us to balance much of that out, but at the same time, we do have, I think, collective preferences. Somebody like Ryan Deckert, I would say, I think he interviewed very well, came off as somebody who was center left, which I think reflected the county politically. As I said, some media savvy. Catherine Harrington, when we interviewed her, came off as a little bit less comfortable with perhaps this process, it wasn't necessarily, I think, that she was saying things that were wrong or bad. It was perhaps the different communication approaches, different styles. For those reasons, I think when we had an opportunity and we interviewed them on the same day, the same morning, in the same room, at different times, we came away from that feeling like, Ryan Deckert has a certain comfort level. We had a certain comfort level with Ryan Deckert. Catherine Harrington was our second choice, and we did end up endorsing her in the general election. But voters had a different perspective on that. They were able to see, if they went to these forums, they were able to see people at these forums. Voters in some parts of Washington County had a familiarity with Catherine Harrington they didn't have with Ryan Deckert. She was a three-term metro councilor. So she, had opportunities to interact with voters in previous election cycles as well.
Gentlemen, one of the things that's been happening in the media, which I'm sure you're well more aware of than I am, is the digital presence. And I'm wondering how much the digital presence has affected your newspapers. First of all, starting off in the smaller world here with Chaz, how do you cope with the digital world that's been lowering the circulation of so many newspapers?
We actually started as a digital news publication before we had a print paper. So we launched in 2013 with a website for the Gills Creek community only. It was a very part-time effort. If you've ever been to Gills Creek, there was no way it could support a full newspaper. In 2017, when I decided to make a go of it as a real business, that's when we started looking at print. So we launched another news site in Banks, the Banks Post, and then in print, we combined the two. So for us, digital has never been our enemy. It has been our future and our past and our present.
And does it generate revenue?
It does. It does. I would like it to generate more revenue, and we are moving more toward that. When we launched our print product, that boosted our revenues, but if you don't need a crystal ball to see where we're headed, paper is temporary in terms of an ongoing stream of revenue that will fund a robust news organization. Success today looks like surviving for a lot of news organizations, and that is true for us as well. And digital, our websites, and people paying for our digital websites is what will sustain us and keep us going.
Sounds like a business model with a future. Mark, what about Pamphlin? How does Pamphlin work with digital, the digital world?
I think it's similar to what Chaz said. The majority of our revenue, I believe, still comes from print. Again, I'm not on the business side, but I believe the majority of our revenue still comes from print, but digital is an ever-growing slice of the pie. Our digital presence, we've diversified a lot over the past, really just the past year or so. We've introduced podcast products. Mm-hmm. We have introduced an e-newsletter. We published an editorial shortly after we launched our podcast. The message of which was basically, we're trying this, bear with us. Mm-hmm. Give us feedback, tell us what's working. No, we're keenly interested in digital. It is, I think, as Chaz said, the future of this business.
And will it be a revenue producing future for you?
I think it has to be. Chaz mentioned earlier in this podcast that his websites are behind a paywall. Ours are also behind a paywall. Again, that's been sort of a trial and error process, and we've been migrating more and more of our papers behind that. That was not a decision that we took lightly. It was a hard call for a lot of us, because we want to service as large a population as possible. At the same time, we need support from not just our advertisers, but also our readers for our mission. Advertising revenues in general are declining, both folks who no longer want to purchase display ads in print, which I continue to believe have value. But some people no longer see value in that. Our digital revenue, while it's been increasing, our digital advertising has been increasing, we're also facing competition for that digital advertising from the likes of Facebook and Google and aggregator services. There are some aggregator services that literally take articles, not necessarily from our company, but they take an article and they reproduce it on their site with, maybe they have attribution.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. you know, they're not compensating us for the revenue that takes away. They're not, you know, compensating. That's thankfully, you know, because we're so local, that's not a problem that we've had to deal with a whole lot. But you know, there are perils to that digital marketplace, because it is so easy to take other people's works and other people's materials. Since we adopted our paywalls, we occasionally have folks who will, you know, they'll be in the comments section on Facebook and they'll say, "I can't read the article. Can somebody share it with me?" And somebody will just take screenshots of the article and post it in our comments. And you know, one, it's against the law. Technically, it is against the law. And two, you know, the work that we do, the work that Chaz does, benefits people in his area. The work that we do, I feel like, is a benefit to the people in our areas. And we try to serve as a broad cross-section of the community as possible. I think we've really tried to keep our subscription rates low, our digital membership rates low. We've tried to customize packages that are cost-effective for readers. You know, we're not trying to gouge anybody. And I recognize that some people are, you know, have other costs, other running costs in their lives, and it's, you know, a difficult thing, and we really try to keep folks in mind. I believe our digital membership, and we have frequent sales, it's comparable to the amount that you would pay for a coffee at Starbucks every month.
And that's as we're coming close to the end of our time. Mark, Chaz, thank you for your input and for helping us to understand the crisis that local journalism is in, and it really, I'm going to label it a crisis. It really does sound like today's publication is exceedingly timely, and I hope people are paying attention. One last question for both of you. What do each of you believe is the most essential purpose of local news, specifically? What does it provide for individual communities? Chaz?
I think for us, especially because we're a rural community with very little infrastructure, most of our readers do not reside in a city. A newspaper is a way to bring the community together over shared interests and things that matter to them, be that politics, school sports, just things that are happening in the community. And I think without that, you just become a collection of houses living in an area with no connection to your neighbors, no shared history, no culture. And practically speaking, as a rural community, that can be devastating to your home, both in a shared history and cultural sense, but practically speaking, experts say that in the course of a natural disaster, your neighbors are what keep you alive. And if you don't know your neighbor because you didn't see them at that community gathering we published about, if you don't know how to get sand from a fire station because you weren't reading the newspaper, if you don't know these things that you read about, it can be devastating.
Well, it's one of the reasons I think that smaller local newspapers are called community journalism, because you've just talked about establishing and maintaining community. Mark, what about your thoughts?
The part of the world around us that we interact with most on a day-to-day basis are our neighbors, our local businesses, our local streets and roads, our bus driver, our gas station attendant, our pastor, our teacher. Without community news, there's less of that focus on the world around us as it pertains most to us. People might say, oh, well, we don't need this news source because we'll just read it in a non-local source. But that non-local source is going to be telling different kinds of stories than we're telling, and they're going to be telling stories about people who our readers don't know, don't come into contact with, that don't affect their lives on a day-to-day basis. I think it's harder, as Chaz said, to have that sense of community when there's no community newspaper. This is something that we share. This is about us. This is about our neighbors. This is about the world that we live in on a day-to-day basis. When that goes away, I think it leaves a tremendous void.
Understood. Once again, gentlemen, thank you. We also want to thank our intern, Shauna Muckle, for her excellent research.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be, whatever time of day it is for you. You are tuned in to the twice-monthly show called Culture in Motion, art, politics, entertainment, activism, music, all these things intersect on the show. I'm Mike Crenshaw. My co-host, Ryan Danley, is here. What's up, Ryan?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. So we're Ryan.
How's this week treating you?
I've been out here in Sisters, Oregon at the Caldera Arts Camp on a writing retreat, and that's been beautiful. It's always good to be able to spend some time in center creativity, get away from the distractions, you know?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of hard times articles to write this week, and that's been good. It's been keeping my head sort of like focused and, you know, keeping my mind pitching stuff, you know, just keeping the brain, the synapses relays bumping as opposed to just darker, you know. So
right. Yeah, unfortunately you're because you're in a rural location, you're coming in and out. But I'm sure people are used to this kind of thing in the COVID reality. So but hey, we got a very special guest today. We have my man, Max Smith. What's up, Mac?
What's going on, Mike?
Oh, man, I'm chilling. But things aren't very chill in the city. I wanted to have you on because you've been such a powerful voice of leadership and clarity. you're a journalist.